Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Mike Gordon, 6 years of career and volunteer experience, a lieutenant with Garden City Fire Rescue in Georgia assigned to Engine 201. Mike comes from an array of government work that ultimately led him to finding his path into the fire service. What's truly remarkable about Mike is a sense of humility that although he is a company officer, he doesn't put himself above the rest of the individuals he works with. Yes, he's an officer, but still a firefighter at heart that's still learning and just wants to be out in the streets doing engine work. With that, I present Mr. Mike Gordon.
All right. My name is Mike Gordon. I'm Lieutenant Garden City Fire Rescue on Engine 201. I've been in the fire service total between career and volunteer time, almost 6 years. And I got into the fire service, I guess, kind of by, I won't say accident. It wasn't my first choice in public safety. I came from a law enforcement family. And that was the path that I had chosen and was working towards that. I did a lot of things before the fire service. I obviously was in the military, spent almost 18 years in the military. But during that time, while I was in the military, I became a reserve deputy sheriff. I went to a police academy in California, became a reserve deputy sheriff. So I did that nights and weekends for a while and then worked for a couple of years at the sheriff's department. And then my military commitment sent me somewhere else. And before I got out of the military, I got into executive protection, was a bodyguard for a high net worth family in Las Vegas for a couple of years after I got out of the military. And I had some friends that were in the fire service. And they suggested I go on a ride along, and I went and was hooked. Loved it from the first time going out for that ride along, and started working towards joining the fire service. So I went through a regionalized academy in Northern California. They're all over the place up there through the colleges, and actually went back to the same college I went to the police academy at and went through the fire academy there. And actually ended up working in the same county that I was a reserve deputy sheriff at. So I saw both sides of it as a cop and then as a fireman in that area. And yeah, that's how I got in. And it just wasn't, like I said, wasn't my initial plan in public safety, but you know, like the excitement, I think somewhere in there, it was bound to happen. I think there was just more of a perfect fit here than it was in law enforcement. So.
Okay. I love the story, man. First off, I want to say thank you for your years of service to our country. That's first and foremost. And secondly, man, so after that, law enforcement, which I have no issues with cops at all, went to law enforcement. And then I'm really intrigued on the bodyguard part. Like how did you get that one? Like, I mean, if you don't mind indulging in that a little bit.
Yeah. I've always had a protector's mindset. Even as a teenager. So I said, this is going to get wild. I always had a protector mindset, and I'd always been interested in the Secret Service and bodyguards and stuff like that growing up. But, you know, like I said, I was gearing towards more being a cop. I was still able to have that protector's mindset and use that as being a law enforcement officer. And just started researching and seeing, you know, the world of executive protection and bodyguarding. I think it was The Bodyguard, Kevin Costner.
Awesome like, movie.
All right. Yeah. So when I got stationed in Las Vegas, my last duty assignment, there was a company there in the area that did firearms training. And I started going to classes there just for some, you know, personal training, you know, for firearms and you know, rifle training. And the owner of the company approached me about wanting to do some executive protection work. It was a side of the company that wasn't advertised and they didn't, you know, really talk about it. They just kind of use those classes to vet and select people and to do some of the jobs they had in the Las Vegas area. So I did that. And went through their executive protection course at UNLV there and started working part-time. I was an independent contractor for that company as an executive protection agent. So my first detail was driving for Bill Gates in Las Vegas. He came to Las Vegas and they needed a local driver, and that was my very first detail. And after that, so that was, I think it's been a couple of years working as an independent contractor, working, doing various details for different athletes and different celebrities and different events in the Las Vegas area. And when I chose to get out of the military, he gave me a pretty good offer to join the company on the corporate side and work on a detail for a high net worth family in Las Vegas that owns a couple properties on the strip, and went from there. So a little bit of travel, a little bit of excitement, it was a good time. Burned myself out though. I was just all in. That's usually me in a nutshell with everything. I'm all in. Once I get into something, I'm all in. So that's how I got into it, man. It was good. It was fun. I enjoyed it. It was just one of those many things I've done in my life. Said from being a reserve deputy sheriff, all was active duty in the military, and then getting the executive protection side of that protector mindset while I was active duty. And then when I got out of active duty, it was like a perfect fit for me. Also at that time I was teaching martial arts at a gym in Las Vegas. I was teaching at a Muay Thai gym. So it all tied in, it all worked out. There were all things that just kind of led me to, to that job, and had a good time doing it. Got to see a lot of cool things and see how the other side lives. And yeah.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Man, that's awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
So you burn yourself out, you get tired of it, you switch from protective detail and you join the fire department. So my
Yeah.
next question for you is, how do you go from Cali to Georgia?
So I moved out here looking for work, man. And it was hard in California to find full-time jobs unless you were a medic. And came out here just kind of scouting out the area, and ended up with a job with an agency here pretty quick, like shockingly fast, which was new to me because I knew how the process was in California of finding, career jobs. And I was looking around here, and I literally walked into a department just asking a question, and had a binder with all my certs in it and resume and everything, and got an interview right then and there and left with the job. And
And this was a fire department.
yes, sir. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, so it was, that was interesting. Went back to California, like, hey, I got a full-time job in Georgia. And mentors that I had from the fire academy were, they're excited for me, of course, but they were like, yeah, you gotta be aware of things like that. And I didn't know much about what was going on here, and moved here about a month later. It was quick. They wanted me in 2 weeks, so they had a safer grant, and they were trying to hire six people. And walked out of the job, came back a month later, and I didn't spend a lot of time in the department, maybe about 29 days.
Wow. Okay.
There were some things. There were some
Okay.
things. So, I moved on and found Garden City. And this, like I said, not knowing much about this area at all, because I was only here for a week when I came out to just kind of scout the area, and didn't know much about the city of Savannah, city pool, or Port Wilmer. I didn't know anything about this area at all. And luckily, when I moved here, I found a roommate who was a fireman. It was funny because I was looking for a place, like just a room to rent, doing the whole Craigslist thing, looking for, people looking for roommates or whatever. And this guy posted about being a fireman and, needing a roommate. I'm like, wow, that's cool. So I hit him up, and we met, and he worked in an agency in South Carolina at Hardeeville, and we hit it off immediately. So it was my first roommate when I moved here. And he kind of just read me into the area, and just was able to kind of adjust and see what was going on. So yeah, Garden City was my first department here, and stayed with Garden City for about a year, and then went over to Pooler with Ian Schulte.
Okay.
Worked with, Ian is definitely a mentor of mine. I like him a lot. So meeting him at different training events in the area, our departments are, cities are right next to each other, and just took an opportunity to go over there to better myself. I liked the training environment over there, and there were some things going on in our agency. So I took a chance and went over there and was there for a short amount of time. And got a new chief at Garden City who, and I stayed at Garden City part time. So I was working part time in Garden City. I was working full time at Pooler. And got a new chief at Garden City, and he asked me to come back, and he gave me an opportunity to test for promotion when I came back. And I made that decision to come back. Garden City has always been a good city. You get a lot of action in Garden City. We get a pretty good amount of fire and a bunch of other crazy stuff. So there's an opportunity I didn't want to pass up, an opportunity to move up and help better a department, and be in a leadership role, something I couldn't really pass up. So came on back to Garden City.
Okay. All right. Man, I'm telling you, full circle, man.
Yeah.
Ian Schulte. Ian Schulte's
Yeah.
a great dude, man, all in on the job. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you left and then you came back and you made lieutenant and now you're with Garden City now.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So my next question for you is, what does the term aggressive mean to you, in your opinion?
Well, just using, I guess, a little bit of a military vernacular to, define, fix, close with, and destroy the enemy, and doing that with our training, being is can't really say advanced, is really nothing advanced, but just being a well-trained department that is willing to go for it all to get a fire out, to save a family. When I was in California, they were an aggressive department because the community that we worked in was, a lot of people who weren't well off. That's all they had, so they were aggressive with their fire attack. Like, we are not going to wait for anybody. We're going to get there and put fire out. This is all these people have, and we're going to save as much as we can. So, I was told when I left California, don't forget where I came from. And I've just carried that here. And that's aggressive to me, man. We were able to train and get ourselves to the point where we're working where everything is just kind of autonomous, where we drill, we train, we have the basics down, and we're able to extend past those basics to get a job done, get in, fight fire, and be, quote unquote aggressive with it, not holding back. Obviously there's those safety factors, but not being afraid to get in there and get the job done.
Okay. All right. Love the answer. Love the answer. This question, it didn't click until I realized your background. So I want to ask you, and this is a personal question. So you know how other fire departments or other firefighters will sometimes quote that the fire department is paramilitary. Now, with you
Yeah.
having an armed forces background, would you say that's accurate? Because I feel like it's not. I
No.
personally feel like I've never been in the military, but I have family members that have, and I do know that there's a set of rules. You will follow rule one, two, three, four, five. If you need to deflect or whatever the case may be, you have to go this route to this route to this route. Whereas fire
Yeah.
departments, the chain of command can be overstepped or overused in said person's favor. So would you say we're paramilitary?
No, not at all. Not at all. Obviously, we get those things with uniform, like you said, the whole chain of command or rank structure. But there's some military influences in there, but I wouldn't call it paramilitary at all.
Okay. That just because it's the term's thrown around, and I'm like, man, there's some stuff I know that people go around this way to this route when it really is supposed to be streamlined, and it doesn't happen. And okay, just want
Yeah.
to.
Yeah, and this area is unique, man, because we've got two large military installations here, and a lot of Army veterans in this area. And I know a lot of people, some people have a hard time transitioning from being in the military and having a military mindset and coming into the fire service and look at everything the same as it was in the military, and trying to run things as if it were the Army or it was the Air Force, it was the Marines. And the experiences that you have leaving the service, those do work in your benefit. You understand the chain of command, you understand wearing a uniform, following orders, this, that, and the third. But can't make it the Army and can't make it the Marine Corps, you know. It's just not the same. So I think I was fortunate enough that I had that time in between service to kind of like decompress a little bit and not try to bring all that with me. Because I made that mistake in executive protection with the details that I ran, and it was like these guys are like, no, that's not gonna work. So you learn a lot of good leadership stuff in the military, especially as an NCO or senior NCO. You can bring those things with you, and it just makes you that much better of a firefighter, makes you that much better of an officer. You just use those skills, but and you can't take everything over and bring it from the military to the fire service. So
Okay, understood. Understood. I did skip this question. For those that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about Garden City? The size, how many stations, personnel, things of that nature.
yeah, so we're about we're 17 some odd square miles. It's three zones. It's very interesting in this area with Garden City. We have three zones, two of which we cover. So we have two stations right now currently. Our third zone is covered by contract by a private company, a private fire department that's here in the area. And we're fighting to get that back. So two stations right now, roughly about 30 personnel total in the department. We've come a long way from when I first started, where there was, just two people on two apparatus, where we're just running two on engine 21, two on engine 22, and that's it. We had a Quint parked in a bay that was used as a reserve for one of the engines. And when the new chief came in, he was like, that needs to be on the road. And so started working on the manpower, increasing that. And now we run two on that Quint, our captain and an engineer, and then three on both fire apparatus, on both engines. We had some part-timers from the city of Savannah working with us, and we relied on them a lot to make sure that we had that third body. But in the past 2 years, we've increased and brought, moved away from part-timers to bringing on full-time staff, so that we have that all the time, and we're not, missing anybody, and hopefully hold, keeping the holds down and, stuff like that. But so yeah, two stations. This area is unique because of the Port of Georgia, which we cover a large portion of the Georgia ports, and with that comes a lot of commercial growth. We've got a lot of commercial properties here, a lot of warehouses, more than I've ever seen anywhere. It's just there's warehouses everywhere that pop up on in the city. And along that with commercial traffic, there's container trucks, running in and out of the city all times of day and night. So that and trains that run from the ports, so it's a pretty unique area, especially in my zone, in zone one. I'm in an area that covers the port. So it's a mix between commercial and some residential, and some industrial as well. We got a couple plants in the area that manufacture different things. So it's pretty diverse. We do have the Savannah River is on the port. So we're working on working on that tech rescue piece. Our chief is a former rescue guy from the city of Savannah, and we've been working on that tech rescue piece. Getting our water rescue training, and we're working on our technical ropes rescue stuff right now. And at some point, I could see us maybe getting divers, because that's all him. He's a diver. He teaches it, and that's his forte. But yeah, so three apparatus, the Quint, two engines, no battalion chiefs. Captains run the shifts, lieutenant on every engine. So I'm going through a lot of changes with our rank structure. We just created the engineer's position last year. We didn't really have a bona fide engineer's position. It was just, hey, you've been here for a while, you want to drive. There really wasn't much to it, and we finally did that and brought lieutenants back. They had lieutenants at one point in time. They had sergeants, which was new to me when I got to this coast. Like, sergeants, like, what's that? So now we have, firefighters, engineers, lieutenants, and the captains, working on battalion chief piece. So sometime in the near future we'll have 3 battalions because we are growing. So
Okay.
yeah.
And so you said the captain runs the shift, but the lieutenants are on the engine.
Yes, sir. So I run the shift at the station I'm at because I'm the only lieutenant there. So I've got my company there, and it's just the three of us. Station two's double company. It's got the Quint there, and then an engine company there, and all the command staff upstairs.
Okay.
The only other people I have in my station are the fire marshals, and that's it. So.
Okay. 3-man minimum, or what's your minimum staffing? If you had to,
Yeah,
would you
three.
got to?
If we have to, we will. And that's like a holiday time. If we're just short and that's what it is, then the chief is all right with us running two. But we're trying to keep that 3-man minimum, so that we have three people on the engine. We've run with two for so long though that it's like, all right, if we run with two, it is what it is. We got it covered. Having three is great. When I went to Pooler, where I was on a 4-man engine, I didn't know what to do sometimes. So it's like, wow, what I do with my hands. So having, three now is great. I've got a newish firefighter on my company, and she's a medic. She's bilingual, speaks fluent Spanish, and that helps out with a lot of the community that we have here. We're trying to bring more guys on so that we have that constant three, and we're not, having to run short for any reason. So, we're working on it.
Okay. Are you guys BLS or ALS?
BLS all the way.
BLS. Okay. Okay.
We've got a few medics in the department. Like I said, my back seater is a medic, and we've got a couple of the guys in the department that are medics, but we're all BLS, man. Keep it simple.
So if a structure box comes out, I'm assuming you're getting, of course, both stations, all three apparatus, and do you get any mutual aid, automatic aid coming in?
Yeah, we do get automatic aid from a neighboring agency from the city of Port Wentworth. We get an engine from them right now, and we just changed our as we say our dispatch to doing the CAD, computer-aided dispatch now, so that we're doing all the AVL dispatching. That's been going for almost about a year now, so it's a little bit different now. We got MDTs in the trucks and supposed to dispatch closest apparatus, which it does. But they're working on getting agreements with other surrounding agencies because it's something that's never really happened here before. Everyone's just kind of had their piece and it's theirs, and they're not sharing with anybody else. And we've always we used to have automatic aid with Pooler, where we would get the ladder or rescue from them and an engine from them. And that went away, and we got one with the city of Port Wentworth. So we always get an engine from them. If our ladder's down, we get a ladder and an engine from them. They're working on, getting it established with another surrounding agency, with the city of Savannah, hopefully, so that, this whole AVL dispatch thing works better, because we're really right in the middle. We have city of Savannah to the east of us. We've got Pooler to the west of us, and we've got Fort Wentworth just northwest of us. So, yeah, those three areas, and including Chatham, on the northwest side. Actually, the northeast side. So we're working on that, and I think that will be a huge deal around here once everyone is working together, especially coming from California, coming from the West Coast, where mutual aid, automatic aid's a big deal, especially with wildland fires. Used to seeing everybody working together and training together, and you had a lot of help when it came to having a large incident. So we're getting there. It's the process, but yeah, it's a weird area. Like Station Two in the city is the bordering road that we have that splits us in the city of Pooler. The west side of that road is the city of Pooler. The roadway belongs to the city of Savannah, and everything east of it is us. So if there's an MVC on the roadway, city of Savannah would get dispatched, but roll right past our station, and we're like, well, we'd get there quicker, but there was never an agreement. So Now that's in place. That's like one of the first steps that they started working on. So now, we'll respond to those incidents on the roadway there, and also get help from the city pooler. And so we're getting there. It's a process, slow process, but we're getting there.
Right. No, I totally get it. I totally get it. And it's crazy that, in 2024 we have issues. And granted, it's beyond our control as firefighters, but as firefighters, it definitely stinks to be on your front pad and watching a city engine or another department having to go through your area to go to an emergency where you could get there faster than that first due company. Like, there are parts in the country where, and like I said, this is my opinion, but well, it's not opinion, it's kind of fact because I've read articles on it. But like, there are certain parts of the country where departments will not call for the closest unit, even though it's not their own, to an emergency. Like, I'm telling you, if the public really knew like the little ins and outs of this, they'd be like, that's a problem. You know what I mean? And it's crazy. But I always wanted to ask, do you see a difference? Because you're from the West Coast and now you're on the East Coast. Do you see a dynamic change or a dynamic shift in culture between West Coast firefighting and East Coast firefighting?
I do. I noticed it pretty quick when I got here. It was just a huge difference, and just in this area in general. The southeast part of Georgia is unique to its own little bubble. The northern part of the state is completely different, and it reminds me more of the West Coast, so the Atlanta area, all the departments up in that area, that's what that reminds me of. But down here, it's just still in its own little bubble. They're still growing up down here a little bit, but it's completely different than what I've experienced on the West Coast. I wasn't in the fire service there long, but long enough to know that, it's different.
Okay. All right. Next topic for you, recruitment and retention. Now, you've been in lots of branches of government. What do you see, or what do you think fire departments can do to attract more individuals into our line of work? Because I mean, I'll definitely say after COVID, like our not just fire department, I mean, in general, lots of employment opportunities, people just don't want to really work type ish anymore. But what can fire departments do better?
Oh, man, that's a I'll say it's a really tough question, but we're trying to figure that out right now ourselves, with recruiting and bringing people on, and it's definitely a problem everywhere. Everyone's feeling that pinch of trying to bring people on and get quality applicants that actually want to do the job, and it's just not like, hey, we're trying some things, obviously, one of the first things is in trying to improve our base pay. We're trying to increase our base pay so that we're more competitive with some of the other agencies in this there in this area. That's one of the first things. Just trying to make ourselves a preferred employer. We want people to come to us. We don't want to have to go and grab people off the street. We want people to see what we do and what our culture is, and what sets us apart from everybody else. We run the only, black over red engines in this area. We just switched to black structure gear, and we're a matter of pride for us and culture, but also to set us apart from everybody else, in hopes that that's some of the things that people look our way. And then just our culture and our department. But it seems like nowadays, really, money is the big deal, like it. This area is definitely way behind in compensation for firefighters. So we're playing a catch-up game now, and a lot of people are leaving and going to other places, not only just for the money, but for they want to get fires, they don't want to be on an ambulance, and they want to get paid for it. So we say all the time, we're not doing this job for money, but we do have families to support. And that does play a huge part in how we recruit and hopefully retain people, so we're getting there. We're making these small steps, these small changes, and our city is finally catching on, and we're making small bites out of this big problem to hopefully bring some quality people in and keep them. The city of Savannah was just hiring recently, and they're doing a lateral program, the first they've done in a long time with laterals, and everybody was worried because they're like, this is a big pond, man, and these guys start fishing out of it, they're taking all of it, thankfully that didn't work out that way. So there's still some good talent out there, and we're trying to find them, and we've been selective about bringing people on. We've had a lot of applicants, but we've tried to remain selective about who we bring in to the fold. Just because of what Garden City was a few years ago. We're trying to, maintain a level of, I guess, of professionalism and performance, within the department. So we're not just taking anybody, that comes to the door. You got to fit in with how, what our culture is in the department, and be willing to work. So yeah,
Oh,
we're working on a lot
yeah.
of things.
That's that. I love it. I like it. I like it, and I love it because Garden City is small enough where, yes, you want bodies, but you're not just taking bodies. And it seems
Yeah.
like certain departments are just pulling people. Hey, are you living? You're breathing? All right, cool. We want to come ride a fire truck? All right, we'll
Yeah.
hire you. I like that you're selective because it's finding those people that fit the culture that you're trying to create. So whoever is in charge of your hiring process, that is awesome. I mean, I
Yeah.
know, yes, you're selective. That means it's limiting to you certain amount of people, but I'd rather have a person riding on the truck with me that actually cares about the job than just for the status or for the money. So kudos to you on that.
Yeah. We've been kind of given full reins on that as lieutenants and captains. The chief pretty much, stays out of it, and he gets the applications and they schedule the interviews, and it's us that does interviews. And this is a small area, and a lot of people just kind of recycled through the area. We've got a few guys that have come from outside the area, but a lot of people are recycled here. So who's coming through and who's who. And we're just selective about who we bring in, and sometimes he doesn't like our answers, but for the good of the department, and then the culture, we're not going backwards, we're only moving forward. So we're finally building that culture in the department that, and I'm and by no ways an old timer there, in terms of time at that department. Yeah, I've been there, for a little bit, but some people have been there longer than me and have seen the evolution of the department and how it's changed, and where it was going and then where it went and then how it's coming back. And it's got this resurgence now for Garden City, where for a while weren't getting a whole lot of respect in the area, and we all decided to change that. We had the ability with the chief that we had now to make those changes. And he's a fireman's chief. He's been around for a minute, and he lets us get after it. We get in, since we get fires, we put them out. And we've had some pretty significant ones in the city, and we've kicked them in the mouth quick. And that's, gained the respect of the agencies in the area. They know that, we ain't playing, and
Awesome.
now that coupled with our training, we're getting better. We didn't really have a bona fide training program. We don't have a training officer. That's one of those things that's also sits on the heads of us lieutenants. Each one of us on shift is a training officer. We make up our training division. And I stole the calendar from Ian. I go to him for help on everything, and we use Cooler's calendar for training and just made it ours. There's some stuff that they do that we don't do, so we use that, and now we have that bona fide training program that has helped us just kind of get everybody, on the same page, so we're not having like three separate shifts, which are almost like three separate departments at times, yeah, it's been a big change.
I love it whenever you hear a fire, whenever you hear a fire officer, firefighter, whatever the case would be, talk about how their chief is a fireman's chief. Like most all firemen want a chief that's going to let the boots on the ground, not I don't want to say control the department, but steer the department in a way where everybody has an input, there's pride, there's a sense of culture there. So that's awesome. And I will say
That's
kind of
one of
back, go ahead.
the, I'm sorry. That's one of the best things I like about Garden City is that we actually, all of us in the department, just the officers, have the ability to make this department what we want it to be. And there's not a lot of I'll say pushback from it, but within reason. But we're allowed to build the culture that we wanted to be. We have a lot of guys that are hard chargers that have been around in other places and, want to see this department grow. We're proud to work in Garden City and, want everyone to know that, hey, we're about it, So he's allowed us to do that, and that's good. And he doesn't hold back on letting us do that, and said he's a Savannah guy, so he's proud when we're out there doing it. And he's like, I'll put you guys head to head with them anytime, so I know what you guys can do. I've seen it. I was nervous at first when he got there because he just didn't know about us and, had a few fires. And he's like, all right, I see what you guys are doing. So that's good. We do have that ability to make this department what we want it to be, in a good way, not a bad way. So it's been great.
I can tell you that I visited the Savannah Charleston area. Beautiful area, very nice for sure. But I'm kind of alluding back to what you said earlier. It's not about pay for firefighters, but in this time, in this day and age where we're at with everything being so expensive, we gotta kind of be compensated, to survive. 'Cause, a lot of firemen have multiple jobs. They're jack of all trades within their department and outside their department. But I will say, my wife, she's game to go anywhere because she works from home. She's like, we can go anywhere. And, I remember I did look in the Charleston, Savannah area. But man, when I looked at the price of some of those homes, I was like, there ain't no way we're doing that. Like, that's crazy what they want for some of these homes down. I was like, holy cow, it's wild.
This area, yeah, it's wild here, man. This area is growing a lot, with the ports, the growth of the ports, and then, south of us, Hyundai bringing their mega facility in. And this place is just blowing up right now, and it's expensive.
I'm like, okay, like, and I know a lot of the members there don't live in the area that they work. They can't. They're like, bro, we don't make that much money to do that.
And this area too, man, like because we're so close to South Carolina, there's a lot of guys that work just across the river in South Carolina, because the pay is, pays better. And so we have a lot of that, but yeah, it's expensive. And I don't feel like everybody else because I have retirement, I have the VA pension and everything, but still it's nice to be compensated, for what you do, and we're finally, like I said, we're finally catching up. It's making a difference.
All right. Cool deal. We're going to transition to leadership topic. Company officer, chief officer, whatever the case may be. You're a lieutenant now, but where would you like to see yourself in the future? Can you see a potential Captain Mike Gordon at some point?
Excuse me, I'm sorry. This thing on mute here. Definitely. I passed up an opportunity to test for captain just recently. I feel like I was ready yet. I hadn't been a lieutenant long, and like I said, our department's small and it's starting to grow, a lot of transition going on, and a lot of people coming and going. So there were positions open, and he's trying to set up a promotion list for the future. And I just I thought about it for a while. I was like, just not ready yet. I'm still trying to learn. I haven't been in the fire service long, I'm I'll be 47 in a few weeks, and I'm trying to get everything that I can out of it in a short amount of time, while my body lets me, and I'm slow rolling it. But I would like to one day, work my way up and, possibly become a chief. If I can't be on the floor anymore, then I'd like to, keep being able to serve the community in other ways and maybe work my way up to being a chief and, keep doing what I'm doing now, trying to help the department move forward from an administrative position, have more of an influence, I guess, by doing that. But yeah, I'm sure the opportunity to come up again about, promoting a captain. But like I said, our captains are on the truck, man. I'm like, I don't want to be on the truck. I want to be on the engine. I want to be on the streets.
Right.
That's kind of been, my motto that I got from another lieutenant that I work with at the pooler, man. I like being in the streets. So, I like being on the engine, but I just wasn't ready yet. I felt like I needed more growth, just in promoting, I know one of your questions about, having the time and the education from promoting, but it doesn't work everywhere. And you have departments like our size where you just don't have that large pool of people to where we can have that separation between everybody. We do outside testing and it's basic, fire one, fire two questions. And, we did an assessment center and, may the best man win, and it's still a learning experience for me. I've been a lieutenant for a little over a year now, and I'm still learning it. It to me, it's like still a fireman. I'm just supervising. I'm no better than anybody else in the department. I'm still learning, and I relied heavily on the driver that I had when I got promoted because he was a lieutenant in the department before and had left and came back just before the deadline of getting promoted. And I told him, like, man, listen, being a lieutenant is just a formality, dude. Like, I'm going to rely on you because you've been here for so long that I'm going to rely on you for a lot, and don't feel like you can't tell me anything because I'm a lieutenant, because that's not the kind of person I am. I'm not going to shut it down because I'm a lieutenant. You can't tell me that. And I know everything. I don't know anything. I'm learning it all right now. Still learning about being a fireman. Yeah, one day when I'm ready, for sure. But it's enjoying being a lieutenant right now.
Yeah, dude, we need more people like you. And I say that because number one, you passed up. I don't want to say you passed up because that's not the right word, but you thought about it and you're like, nope, not at the right time. I know a good amount of individuals who'd be like, yep, sure, bam. And then they get it and boom, they're captain. But you want to have enough time in that role to get better at that role. And then yes, you'll make that move whenever you're ready. Like, I love that you didn't feel the pressure of, okay, yeah, I'm gonna promote. Like, if you don't want to promote, you don't have to promote. Don't let other people tell you need to promote. You need to promote. It's the individual that has to feel 100% confident that, okay, I'm ready, and boom, they go for it. Secondly, I love the humility because how you mentioned your driver, you relied on your driver. Like, hey, dude, I just got in this position. You've had it before. I'm gonna rely on you. Good leaders rely on, whether it's their engineer, it could be their fireman, their crew. Good leaders rely on the people that they are surrounded with because it makes you better and it makes them better because you give them the opportunity for input and to show them growth too for future down the line where, hey, I was with Mike, I was out, he was my lieutenant, and you know what? I'm going to go up for the lieutenant too. And the attributes that they see that you have will translate and correlate with them too. So I love it, man, because that's why I said we need more people like you, because you don't know how many individuals I know, once they get the gold, brass, or the collar or the status, man, they completely change. And you're like, what happened? Who are you? Oh, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you. I'm beneath you. Okay, I'm sorry. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think being in the military, it helped with that too, because you go through the whole promotion process in the military, and it's like, well, you were an airman yesterday, now you're an NCO, and now I'm supervising all these people. And I'm no different. Now I'm just supervising. I'm still an Air Force airman, or still a soldier, whatever your service is. I never approached it that way, and I've tried to just bring that here, and use one of those skills I learned in the military, bring it here. And I relied my entire crew backseater on, I rely on them heavily. Don't be afraid to tell me something. Don't be afraid to tell me if I miss something. Like, we're all working together. And I'm not gonna feel some kind of way about it because I'm a lieutenant and you're a fireman or you're an engineer. It's whatever, man. I haven't been in this game long enough. Even if I was, I still wouldn't be that way. If I had, been doing this a whole long time, I still wouldn't be that way.
Right. Okay. Man, I don't need to tell you to keep it up, because I already foresee as you move up, you will not forget that attribute of yours will always be in there. So that's awesome. That's awesome. I'm gonna kind of switch it to you stated earlier you're 47.
About to be, yeah.
About to be 47. So this kind of correlates with physical fitness in the fire service. You know as well as I do, man, this job, as you get older, like you'll wake up in the morning and you're like, ooh, that hurts. It never used to hurt before. So how important is physical fitness in regards to the fire service?
Oh, it's definitely important, man. I've always been a fit person. I've never not been an unfit person, just because of the type of work that I've done, and some of the things I've experienced in life. I've always maintained a level of fitness. I could be better. I could work out more. I could get my gear more, for sure. But I do work on maintaining, a level of fitness that is crucial to surviving this job. It helps with the stress. It's just, your fire ground performance. It is definitely important. And I learned that at Pooler. Like, I wasn't fit enough. I got over there. Those guys work it, but I understand the importance of it, and we try to get out there and work out as much as possible. I'm kind of a loner when it comes to working out. I do my own thing. I don't subscribe to a lot of the fatter stuff. I know what works for me. I know what I've done in the past and how it's worked for me, especially throughout, my fighting career. I know how my body responds to certain things. Now it's a matter of flexibility for me, so I probably need to start looking at yoga, because I'm the least flexible person right now. But I got to keep up with them young bucks, man. So I try to stay after it. I got an assault bike here in the house and some weights, and I get out to the gym, walk the dog. That works for me, and it keeps me in shape. But it is definitely important. A lot of people don't do it. They won't work out. They don't want to, be too tired to fight a fire, or something. I've heard so many different things. So it's like, you're gonna be tired fighting it anyway, dude. If you don't work out at all, then you're really gonna be hurting, And I think about places that where guys are fighting, getting multiple jobs a day, a shift, man. Like, we may get one, man. Try to get out here and work out and be fit for it. Come on down. Do something. Go out and do some push-ups or something. It doesn't have to be something where, I'll go out. I'm a night owl, man. I don't go to bed till late. I go to bed well after my crew, and I'm up well before my crew. But I may go out there and, hit some weights. Doesn't always mean you got to dress out and throw on all your PT gear or whatever. I go out there and do something, stay active, get on some bands, do some shoulder presses, do some lunges, do some push-ups, do some squats and sit-ups, just stay fit. That old school fit, man, that prison fit.
I agree with you, man. I mean, I pretty much, there's so many things out there, but I kind of just do what I call functional and like job type related maneuvers. 'Cause yes, as you get older, your mobility, your flexibility becomes a lot, I don't want to say worse, but a lot different than when you were younger. And yeah, you stated it. I mean, it's a young man and women's game out here. Like as you get older, you can't just be the recliner holder and think you know, oh, I'll be able to perform, I'll be able to do this, especially where you're at. I know the summer's coming up. Summer heat
Man.
is brutal.
Yeah. Hey, listen, man, that summer heat, I didn't believe it at first. You know, like when I got here, they were like, oh, wait till the summer. I'm like, man, whatever. That first summer, I was like, yo, this is ridiculous. It is harder than the hinges and gates of hell here. And I do not,
The humidity is no joke.
So, yeah, that's definitely different than the West Coast. It is hot here in the summertime, man. Yeah.
Yeah. If they do put turnout gear on for regular calls, man. I mean, come summertime, you know, it's nothing for me to take 3 or 4 showers in a shift. Like we can run, I could be nice and clean and we run a fire alarm at night and you're like, oh, it's nighttime. But that humidity's up, you get back and you're soaking wet. And it's like, all right, let me in the shower real quick. Cause I mean, it is what it is. It's down south heat.
I appreciated the way you know I got the pooler. Ian kept us in gear a lot, and I went through a shortened academy there, recruit school, and me and two other guys, and it was springtime going into summertime, and we stayed in gear and we sweat a lot, and you learn really fast, like, all right, I gotta drink more water, but I gotta stay in this gear a little bit more too and get used to being in it, where it's not a burden being in it. It's gonna be hot either way, man. It's gonna suck, but do at least do what you can to acclimate to it so that you're prepared for it, where it's not just a total shock to your system, because you never put it on, Yeah,
Absolutely.
that's
Okay.
important. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see here. Communication. You've already stated that your fire chief, obviously, your new fire chief, obviously, he has communication down pat for you guys because he allows the captains and lieutenants to create a certain culture within the fire department. So my question to you is, how important is communication, whether it's from the fire chief or not? It could be you also communicating to the fire chief or other captains or lieutenants on whatever the case may be, but it's my opinion that the most successful departments are always the ones that have a big line of communication.
Our communication lines are very open in our department. The chief likes to communicate with the crews. He is very involved with what we do on a daily basis, and sometimes he's out doing things and we're like, stop it. Like, go do chief stuff. But that's him. He's an active guy, he's a fireman, and he wants to get out there and do work too. But with that, he's very open with communication, so there's a lot of time spent out in the patio, while he smokes a cigar and we talk about what's going on in the city and what's going on in the department, and just bouncing ideas off of each other and, just going back and forth. And I think it's great. It's definitely helped out a lot to where we know kind of how what's going on and how we can plan to make things better. And, he agrees with some things and doesn't agree with others. And, sometimes it's a hard no, and then he chews on it for a bit and then comes back and was like, that's actually a good idea. So that's been really good, that we had that open communication, because it's definitely, I think it's helped us a lot. Now communication's two ways. So some people receive what he says differently and it starts rumors, and it's like, all right. Sometimes we like him to just kind of certain things say for the group, and that way everybody hears it at the same time. And if there's questions, then they can be answered right then and there. And it's not somebody making an assumption because they heard something that they wanted to hear. He's pretty open, and he doesn't hold back. He doesn't hold back. And I appreciate that.
I think most firemen would definitely love that. And I know it's all department specific. You can't expect a fire chief to come around if you have like 60 something stations, 100 something stations, but the smaller organizations, man, it's always nice for if your crew's out training, next you see your fire chief putting some gear on and he's getting some reps in with you. Like, to me, that goes a long way.
Listen, like the first fire when I got back to Garden City, this thing was ripping and masking up the door. I looked to my left and I'm like, double taking. This dude is masking up and snatches a nozzle and goes in. I'm like, all right, bet. That's how it is. Cool. I'm down with that. You
Right.
know? And for him, that was, you know, he says, like, I gotta let you guys do your thing, you know, but I like to play too, you know. So he's trying to find that balance as a chief of, you know, running command and, you know, letting us do our thing. But you can see him, he's chomping at the bit to get in there and get after it too. So I like it. I had a chief like that at the department I was at in California. If you waited a second and he was taking it and he was going, you know, and it's like, all right. And you weren't getting it back. So I appreciate the fact that he's open with us and that he's, you know, doesn't hold back. There's things obviously he doesn't tell us that he can't really tell us, and that's fine. You know, we do try to pry it out of him some way, shape, or form, but you know, I do like that he, you know, we hear the things that we need to hear, and you know, he listens to it. He takes, you know, what we say is valuable to him. You know, he just doesn't dismiss it. Because, you know, he's a chief and he makes the decisions. He wants to know what we want as a department, you know. That's been good.
Fantastic.
And that goes the other way too, like with everybody else. You know, I try to be open with my crew and expect them to be open as well for that whole communication piece. Like, don't hold anything back, you know, let's talk about things and just make sure we pass on information. Nothing's being left out or we're not forgetting to tell people different things. So, you know, you miss something easy here, you know, because it wasn't communicated, you know. So we don't rely on email a whole lot or communicating things because he does come down to tell you, like, hey, this is what we got going.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Mike, I want to say, man, I appreciate you coming on and talking. I know it's probably like you probably thought it was like some sort of spam when I sent you the message, like, what? Who is this? But
I was not sure at all, man. I hit up I was, you know, I didn't know how to react to it. And you know, I asked a few guys at work. They're like, yeah, go for it, man. I mean, what you have to say is valuable. You know, you see people on podcasts and it's always, you know, kind of like the big names in the fire service. And I love listening to the podcasts and I listen to all kinds of them all the time. And I'm like, what do I got to say? You know, that is anybody wants to hear. And Ian really solidified it. It was like, dude, you've had an interesting life and a lot of experiences, and you know, that's valuable information to other people. So, you know, don't feel some kind of way about, you know, participating in a podcast and, you know, telling people about yourself. So.
No, absolutely. I tell Ian, man. Well, actually, I'll just text Ian later. But no, man. I thank you. Thank you for coming on and sharing your story. Like I said, it's not about if you've got 20 years, 25 years under your belt. I look at it as if you truly care about the fire service, it doesn't matter if you've been on 6 months or a year. If you care about training, working out, trying to be the best version of yourself for the community, the area you serve, for your family at home, man, like you are worth talking to. Everybody has a seat at the table in my book. There's some people that
Yes,
disagree
sir.
with that, but that's not the way I look at it. I don't care if you're the probie or what. If you have something positive to contribute to the fire service, I want to hear you. So I just got to say thank you for
Yeah.
coming on.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You have a good one.
You too.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.